Okay, Yatira. So, again, thank you for the second part of that interview. So, we were getting to the point where you're at Costa Laid and you met Surge, you met Norma and Jose. But let's backtrace, like you mentioned, let's backtrace to when was the first time that you disclosed your undocumented status to someone else besides your family circle, right? So, you want to start there? We can.
Okay. So I didn't really disclose, but I remember that the first time I knew that I was different, or that, I think being documented play a role, was in elementary. Like I said, I came to the US in 1989, and I finished for 5th grade here in the US. And the way it worked for us, because we were already late in the year, or we were already here, and everything was full, we got bus to Lakewood. We lived in Long Beach, and we got bus to Lakewood to an all-white school, mainly except for those two or three ESL classes. And I remember one day there was a competition, where it came to like a relay race, or it was a running competition. And I clearly remember that you were gonna win a turkey for Thanksgiving if you were the
Turkey.
winner. And I did pretty well, but unfortunately I did not get the turkey, and they said that I couldn't, because I was undocumented, or because we didn't have papers. And this was back in 1989. So I am, now that I think about it as an adult, is of course they knew we were immigrants because we were in ESL classes, right? But I just can't believe that it was just a turkey.
Right, and
That they couldn't give it to us because, according to them, we were undocumented. But since I was 10 years old, I guess que no le puse mucho cuidado. It was just like, oh, okay. I just remember feeling uncomfortable, if I could say it like that, uncomfortable. And I don't know if it was embarrassment. But that's what I remember. That's what stood out from that race, or from that competition. But it was just weird. It was weird.
And these was the people at school, like the teachers who told you this?
Yeah, it was the teachers, yes. Again, they didn't tell me they didn't tell me directly. I could hear in the background. So I was there, but I could hear them in the background, and I could hear that they wouldn't. Now, again, I didn't speak English, but there was someone there that was translating, and that's all I remember, but I didn't know what that meant, to be honest.
Right, you're a child. That's
Yeah,
it.
I didn't know what that meant. And again, we were just coming in from Mexico, didn't speak the language at all, and very uncomfortable to be in a white school.
And your ESL peers, you mentioned there were not Latinos or
Yeah,
Latinas, right?
there was difficulty communicating with them, because I do remember there was quite a bit of students. Cambodia was, I think, there were a lot of Cambodians in my neighborhood at that time that I was growing up.
Right, Long Beach has a high population of Cambodian immigrants. Yeah, so these feelings of embarrassment, uncomfortable, did you ever spoke about it with your family members or someone about it?
No, I don't remember talking about it, to be honest. I just let it go. Yeah.
And do you think that that might have a that played a role later on as you move forward in your education, that maybe you were able to connect with the teachers because you had the fear that they might reject you or just not, I guess, not help you out because of the status that you had.
Perhaps it did, because after that, I just learned to be quiet about that issue, you know. And even at home, I mean, back in the 90s, it was still like that was taboo. You don't really talk about it. And so, so I just, I didn't bring it up. I just kept quiet.
And it was a taboo because it wasn't speak up, or just because they told you explicitly not to say anything.
Yes, in my family, it was something that, you know, please don't talk about that. And
Okay.
I think we will hear more about ICE, you know, in the 90s than even nowadays, I remember. And so it was just something that you wouldn't really talk about just to be safe.
Right, the immigration and the political climate was different, right, than it's now per se. Yeah, that is. And if my ask, if you feel comfortable answering these questions and you're not, that's okay. Are you still documented?
No.
Okay.
So I actually did all of my schooling undocumented. I graduated with my master's degree in again, I was supposed to graduate in June of 2006, but I didn't finish my thesis on time. And so I didn't finish school till the following year in April. But in two, I was, when I graduated with my master's, when I walked with the rest of my friends, actually, that day of graduation, I went to get married. So I got married on June 10th, 2006, and got married. And my then husband is the one that helped me with my immigration paperwork. So we got married and we applied right away. Thankfully, my stepfather had actually petitioned us. He's still a resident. And we were able to apply under the 245i, in which, you know, we didn't need to leave the country. And so I actually started the paperwork probably around July of 2006. And by the following year, I was already a resident. I was a resident in 2007, and I waited to become a US citizen. And I became a US citizen in 2012.
Yay, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
And why did you wait so long?
You know, I'm not sure, to be honest, why I just waited. I'm not sure if it was the fact that I just felt like I was going to give a part of myself, maybe, away. Or if it was the fact that I just didn't want responsibilities at that moment, to be honest, you know. And so it was just I just waited, and by the time I decided to do it, I decided to do it. And it was when I was gonna have my first son, and I said, no, I gotta do this now. And so I did it. But then what was happening in 2012? I think well, it's always important, you know, they're always talking about becoming a citizen so that you can vote for presidents. And I think it
And
was
it was
that.
presidential elections.
Yes. So I was trying to be among that group of people so that I could vote in 2012. Yeah, so that's how I became a legal that's how I became a US citizen. In last year, Okay, last year I received a letter from immigration letting me know that I had been approved to apply for the visa that my stepfather applied for me in 97.
Oh
In
my God.
97.
Yes.
And so when I saw
Yes.
that letter, I'm like, wow, I would have waited this long to be able to get a visa under my stepfather's application. And it was eye awakening. It was just like, oh, wow, look at how many years, 97 to th 2021. I mean, that was just incredible to see. And then at the same time, I got scared. I got scared because it's like, how is it that I'm a US citizen now and immigration is telling me that, if I don't apply within the next 3 months, if I don't answer to this, then I will not qualify for a visa anymore. And I was trying to get a hold of them to let them know, hey, I'm now a US citizen. And I could never get a hold of anyone. I emailed them. I said, I'm now a US citizen. What do you want me to do? It was all that fear came up again, being scared that that was going to be taken away. But I got no reply from anyone. I did make a copy of that email just in case something happens in the future. And then in talking to other people, they just said, that there's actually no communication between immigration and that, they just probably
Interesting.
never knew. They probably never connected. And I think it was also when I applied, it was under Yadira Ramirez Diaz, And then when I became a citizen and a resident, it was under Yadira Ramirez Flores. So probably the name change, made a
May
difference.
have
They couldn't
something.
connect, but I was upset. I'm like, wow, you guys are not doing your job. How could you guys not know? But I said, at the same time, there came this fear of everything was going to be taken away. Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's so I would say the trauma that we carry has been documented, right, at some point,
Yeah.
and then you still constantly thinking, what if it gets taken away, right? Yes.
Yes.
I think it's a
Yeah.
valid emotion to have. And I'm pretty sure you're not the only one who experiences that fear of losing the status once you already have
Yes.
it.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you
I
for
mean,
sharing that.
so the reply came 24 years later. 24 years later. I
97,
mean,
yeah.
97 to 2021 that I could apply for a visa. Wow, 24 years.
Yeah, so Mexicans do wait longer than any
Yeah.
other nationality to get a visa. And it's so ridiculous that we had to wait that long. We are neighbors and we have land ties, we have everything. I mean, we can even go back in history and retold everything, right? And it's just like it doesn't make any sense. But I'm glad you're a U.S. citizen now and you can help change those policies and those laws.
Yes,
Yes,
yes.
okay.
So yeah, so that's how I became, and again, I did it upon graduation. I had been dating my boyfriend for about 10 years. So when we got divorced barely in May of this year. Well, the divorce came through barely in May of this year. And when he made a comment about, but I helped you. Oh, when I received that letter, I showed him and he said, well, aren't you happy that I helped you with your papers? And the way he said it, it was just like, it was like I couldn't believe he had mentioned those words to me because I knew that I didn't get married for the papers, after being together for 10 years, I knew that I didn't do it for that. But it was just sarcastically said, which I think for a moment there, como que me sentía como que maybe I need to stay por agradecimiento, in this relationship, even though it's not a good relationship. But that's the way I felt at that time when he told me that, almost como que si le debiera algo.
Right. Well, I'm glad you didn't stay if it wasn't a good relationship, right? Not even for but to think to pay back, I guess. But I'm glad you didn't. And yeah, so you know, I think that's an issue that a lot of women go through. And thank you for sharing that. That's a very emotional experience that you went through. And yes, I think that we need to do some work around women being mistreated because of having obtained their legal status through their spouses. So that's a source of violence, not only physical but also psychological violence, right? And I'm sure you can speak of this more than me, but I think that we need to do something to address those issues. And you're not the only the first person I hear say something like that. But yes, perhaps in the future we could organize to do something around this.
Yeah, you know, and now that I think about it, since you're talking about this, in 2009, it was when, you know, so 2 years later after I got married, it was when, you know, we started having problems with our marriage, and where he actually, and I'm sorry to disclose so much, but he actually